What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thought it would be important and timely, considering all that has happened with Ukraine. There's so much going on. A number of critical pacts were signed last week with various Western powers as well as Japan. I thought it is time to have Professor Yoshika Herrera from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's a professor of political science, and her research focuses on Russian politics, nationalism, identity, and ethnic politics. She's been on a whole lot of different shows. And so it's my pleasure to welcome back Professor Herrera. Thanks so much for making time, Professor.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
The question that pops to my mind, and in case folks, if you've been not quite in the weeds on Ukraine, they have suffered losses of territory, especially in the northeast of their country. There's been critical attacks on their power plants and energy infrastructure by Russia. They've suffered, frankly, some severe losses. All of this coming, you know, on the heels of the United States' delay in funding. Now we're seeing additional pacts with other Western allies of Ukraine's as well as Japan just last week. Is this too little too late, Professor?
No, I don't think it's... that is a narrative that some people have. But it could be more. It could have been sooner. But our aid is making a difference. And you can already see since April that it's made a difference. So I don't think, you know, it's not like we missed the bus.
Thank goodness.
There's still a lot to be done. Yeah, there's still a lot to be done. People can debate maybe some things could have been done differently in the first year of the war. Which would have changed the trajectory maybe for the second year, for the offensive. There different things could have happened. But at this point, I think the commitment by the U.S. in April of this year was really important.
And just last
week. There have been some interesting things that have come up even recently in the last week or so.
Yeah, please tell people a little bit of the detail of what those things are. And why does all of this matter? We obviously understand that Ukraine needs money to fight a war, but it's more than that, isn't it?
Yes. So let's go through a couple of things that happen. One is that the U.S. and other G7 countries, those are kind of like the important big seven countries, agreed to use $50 billion based on interest from frozen Russian assets to fund the Ukrainian government. So that's a huge amount of money. The current military budget of Ukraine is $6 billion. So a $50 billion infusion is obviously like really
game changer.
And that's a way, that's a way of getting Russia essentially to pay for the war. That's not going to be all at once, but still that's pretty important. And there's the rest of the assets also could be used for reconstruction. That's still under debate. Another thing is that the U.S. just passed another round of sanctions against individuals, and they're stepping up work on these secondary sanctions. So the Russian economy has been hobbled, but not really not hobbled enough by the sanctions, and much more could be done on the sanctions. And so some more happened this last week. And another kind of important thing that happened is there was this Ukrainian peace summit over the weekend, and it didn't result in the end of the war. But what was interesting is that 90 countries attended. Now there's around, let's say, a little bit less than 200 countries in the world. Okay, so that's almost half the countries of the world attended. And 80 of them signed a joint communique saying that they agree with the need for food security, nuclear security, and the return of prisoners and children, which is actually a huge human rights violation that's going on in the war. So that's, I think, kind of interesting to show that so much of the world is on Ukraine's side, So, you know, those are, I guess, some of the big things that happened this week. But in terms of your question of like, why does it matter? That's, you know, I've been thinking about that. And I want to say, you know, you like students always ask me, or actually we ask each other in political science when somebody gives a talk, why should we care about this? Or, you know, what is interesting about this? I think the number one thing, you know, and I'm actually coming to you from Munich here in Germany. I'm here on a fellowship. So it's kind of interesting.
Oh my gosh, thank you for making time late in your evening.
No problem. But, you know, it's interesting to be here in Europe. And I actually went to Georgia, the country, mm-hmm. over the weekend. You know, Russia had a war with Georgia in 2008. So it's just very interesting to see the perspective on things from here. And the first thing I think Americans need to understand is that Putin is not going to stop with Ukraine. So it's really, I mean, I'm sitting here in Munich in kind of the land of the one of the strongholds of the Nazi movement under Hitler, in terms of regional support for the Nazis. And so everybody's constantly talking about that history and how it unfolded, et cetera. And it's a very clear story of appeasement not working, of a dictator who had plans for taking over other countries, and that's what he was going to do. And no amount of saying like, okay, what if we give you this? What if we give you that? Will you stop? No, Putin is not going to stop if he is successful in Ukraine. And even if there's a ceasefire, even if he gets some parts of it, he's just going to use that time to build up and go further. So I think that's one thing, is to understand. And also there was just the commemoration of Normandy and the D-Day invasion and all that. So, you know, the parallels with Hitler are sort of very in people's minds here. So the potential for attacking other European states is one thing. But the other thing is that
which could draw the United States into war, especially if they are a member of NATO, which has expanded, right? So there's, and we understand that Joe Biden has expressed reticence with respect to Ukraine joining NATO while this war goes on, because it would de facto require the United States to actually potentially commit troops to help to defend Ukraine. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, Professor. Fair enough. Please continue.
No, that's exactly right. And actually, the U.S. just signed a bilateral security agreement, a 10-year agreement with Ukraine. The language is a little bit vague, but it's kind of a commitment. I mean, it's not ironclad. It says that if there's another attack, we would talk, and it's meant to, quote, accelerate Ukraine's Euro-Atlantic integration, et cetera. So Ukraine cannot join. It's not feasible for Ukraine, for many reasons, to join NATO while the war is going on. One of the things that Putin wanted from the start was to weaken NATO. In the process of the war, Sweden and Finland have joined, greatly strengthening NATO. And Putin, as part of his, quote, peace plan, which is actually just a set of maximalist gains that have not changed since the start of the war, one of his demands is that Ukraine not be part of NATO. But nobody has taken that seriously. So there's a potential for wider war. So I think that's one thing. The U.S. could be drawn into it. It could escalate. So it's very dangerous on that side. I mean, it's very dangerous because of the nuclear weapons, obviously. But the other thing I think people need to understand is that Russia is committed now to an anti-Western, anti-American way of life. And it's not just a little bit less democratic. It's not just saying, okay, I'm going to stay in power for 25 years. It's saying, I'm going to arrest U.S. citizens wherever I have the ability to do so. So Evan Gershkowitz, the Wall Street Journal reporter who's in jail, I mean, it's such that any American citizen is in danger if they visit Russia because of potentially being arrested and used as a pawn.
But I'm sorry to interrupt. I think over the weekend, not a high level person, but some military man did a stopover in Vladivostok on his way home and managed to get himself arrested. He went there to like see his girlfriend. So what you're talking about isn't like it just happened this weekend in Vladivostok.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was arrested a bit earlier, but there was another. I think he was processed or some. Like he had been detained and he's like formally charged.
Okay. Thank you.
But yeah, I mean that. You know, Russia is turning into something like North Korea. So it's not just a little bit of a dictatorship. It's not just a little bit less freedoms or rights. It's becoming a really a place where anybody can, they're arresting teenagers, they're arresting poets, you know, they're arresting journalists. It's a really terrible place that Putin has taken Russia during his reign. Much like North Korea, Iran. I mean, these are the kind of parallels, like literally the worst countries that you can think of in terms of civil rights and liberty. Civil rights and liberties, like, just puts it too nicely. It's like even basic way of
freedom
living
of movement. Freedom of movement is one that I like to. Your ability to go where you would like, when you would like, is being curtailed to such an extent in Russia. It's for only like a certain segment of the population now that has been pre-approved as if I. For, you know, more getting around.
And Russia is attacking democracies through election interference, propaganda, cybersecurity. There's reports, remember the Havana Syndrome?
Yes.
A pretty reputable set of journalists claims that this is a Russian operation. Christo Grozev, he's the one that's in the Navalny movie, etc. So...
If you can hang on 1 second, sure. Professor, my guest this half hour, such an important topic, Dr. Yoshiko Herrera from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a Russia expert. We're going to continue to talk about why what Vladimir Putin is doing matters, what our role is as the United States, and why it matters to each and every one of you. Stick with us. We'll be back after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My guest this half hour is Dr. Yoshiko Herrera of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a political science professor who specializes in Russia. We've been talking this half hour about what Russia has really become, why what Vladimir Putin is planning isn't just about Ukraine, why it's really about a threat to Western democracy, to Western Europe, and thus is a threat to the United States, an active everyday threat. Professor, before we went to break, you were getting into sort of, there's a very real threat of further invasions, which could drag the United States into armed conflict with Russia, that Putin's plan goes far beyond Ukraine. Tell people, like, what happens next, right? Like, what's the thing that an average American should be looking for? How does this end up hitting our pocketbook? How does it end up impacting our lives, our military? How much is this? And also another question I'll throw out there for you to think about is the relationship between China and Russia is obviously a critical one. China, Iran, and Russia. There's, I hate to use this term because it's old, but an axis of evil in sort of a way that's happening. Please go ahead, Professor.
Yeah. Okay. So I think there's a lot of numbers a person could throw around, but I think the easiest way to understand the U.S. support for the Ukraine war financially is that it is not costing us hardly anything, okay? Because when you put it in perspective, And you say, you can start with like, we've committed to them in five bills, $175 billion. That's like so much money. Okay. But you take that and you say, actually only $107 billion actually goes to Ukraine. The rest of it goes to the US. Within that $107 billion, about two thirds of that is on weapons. Guess where those weapons are produced? In the United States. So first of all, a lot of the money actually comes back to our economy, and states that have defense industries, counties that have defense industries are gaining from that. So that's one thing. The other thing is that if we look at the overall defense budget that we have, the Department of Defense, you know, this is one of the, our largest,
budget largest, line items. Yes.
Budget line. This is 7%. This big aid package of $61 billion for this year represents 7%. Okay. So if we can degrade Russia's capacities for 7% of our budget, that's obviously not very much. And that's kind of a deal for us. But also, if we look at our overall GDP being the world's largest economy, what we're spending on Ukraine is less than 0.5% of our GDP. Okay. It's closer to like 0.3%. So when you look at it that way, and you say a country like Estonia is spending like more than 2.5% of GDP. So, I mean, that's much more in terms of the percentage that they have. Lots of our European NATO allies are spending in the 2% range on Ukraine aid, military aid. So while we are the largest military aid provider to Ukraine, and that's really important, other countries are also chipping in. And if you look at the overall financial assistance to the government of Ukraine, not just military, the EU is actually spending more than the United States. So I just think there's lots of ways to cut this and say, well, it's this or that, how much. But I would say overall, in terms of our overall defense budget and in terms of our overall economy, it is not a substantial amount given the other things that we spend money on. If you compare to the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, it's very small. I mean, that was over $2 trillion. That's $300 million a day for 20 years gets you to 2 trillion.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again? $2 trillion in Afghanistan.
$2.3 trillion.
How much is that a day?
That is $300 million a day for 20 years. Mm. Okay. And the thing is that it's very different because we are helping the Ukrainians to do the fighting to defend their own country. It's not going to be a scenario where once we stop helping them, they say, okay, never mind, we're going to switch sides and go to the Russian side. We're helping them to maintain their country and their nationhood. So I think that a really important thing, I think, is for people not to kind of just hear a big number and say, like, that's too much money, we can't afford it. But instead to think, given the threat that Russia poses to the United States, this is a very small amount of money in order to degrade that threat.
And my brain works a bit as an economist. So apologies to everyone for how brutally transactional this will sound. Hmm. But the way that one basic way that I think a lot of my conservative friends might contextualize this is this: from a return on investment in terms of the United States security and avoidance of future exponentially exploding security costs, every U.S. dollar spent in Ukraine is probably returning so much more to us as a nation in terms of our security and even the avoidance of future massive expansions than did all of our expenditures in Afghanistan from an overall U.S. security perspective. Again, we're talking about human beings and countries,
yes,
and I apologize for that. But some of the conservative critique is literally focused, as you've been pointing out, Professor, on the dollar figures. For what the threat level that Russia poses now is as great as it's been, basically, right, since Glasnost and Gorbachev and this former USSR, for what we're spending there, that is an immense investment in our own security. This idea that the investment in Ukrainian defense is somehow not an investment in our own national defense, it still boggles my mind. I'll leave it to you for some closing thoughts, Professor.
No, I absolutely agree with that. And I share your concern that, you know, we haven't even talked about the human cost to Ukraine and the moral imperative to do the right thing. And of course, like, those are really important, and I don't want to put that aside. But as you say, like, from a strictly security perspective and an economics perspective, supporting Ukraine is definitely in our national interest. And it's relatively inexpensive way to counter this Russian threat.
My guest this half hour, we're going to have to leave it there, is Professor Yoshiko Herrera from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a Russian expert in their political science department. Thank you so much, Professor. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your farm update is next, and then I'll be back with Brian for perhaps a little lighter conversation. Again, thanks, Professor. We really appreciate your time. This is not a test, it's not a drill. Take no prisoners, break their will.
Go get him!
So, do you come to Milwaukee often?
I've always been the one to say the first goodbye. Had to love and lose 100 million times. Had to get it wrong to know just what I like. Now I'm falling. You say my name like I have never heard before.
Ooh, what's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Monday. Hope everybody's staying cool out there. I was doing a little professional development on Thursday and Friday and wasn't on the air when Trump called Milwaukee a horrible city.
I was going to say, you know, you look much more professionally developed.
I do. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good.
What does that mean?
Learning stuff.
Oh,
learnings.
Okay, cool.
I was doing some learnings. According to some Facebook commentators, not nearly enough.
You know, if we just lived our life according to Facebook... I really don't know what would happen.
Yeah, not good things.
My life got better when I stopped doing it all the time.
Yeah, if you want to see some of the spicy comments flowing our way, you can check us out on Facebook or YouTube Live. Also, what is it, X? We live on X?
And Instagram. Yeah, the comments are not spicy. They're more just bland and just in a can. Like, they just kind of lobbed in
stale.
A can.
Yeah.
Stale.
So apparently Trump got in a meeting with a bunch of Republicans and called Milwaukee a horrible city. On its face, of course he said this, right? Like, of course he said this.
Yeah.
Would have been the easiest thing on the planet. People just say, yeah, that's Trump doing the thing. Little awkward since the RNC is here, just a wee bit.
Yeah, but again, he's crept on everywhere he's ever been.
Basically, what I thought was pretty amusing, though, was the mayor of Milwaukee's response. I had to give him props on this one. Chevy Mayor Cavalier Johnson, giving him his due honorifics, not a guy I would call for the clapback. You know what I'm saying? But I think he did pretty well here. So let's take a listen. This is Mayor Johnson responding, I believe, on Friday last week, to Donald Trump calling Milwaukee a horrible city.
Well, Donald Trump wants to talk about things that he thinks are horrible. All of us lived through his presidency, so right back at you, buddy. I'd say that.
I love it.
Obviously, Donald Trump is wrong about something yet again.
he goes on. But he's wrong yet again. Go Chevy. That was a good one.
I like that.
I liked it, too. Late night had a bit of fun. So I thought we should have a bit of fun. I believe this is Jimmy Kimmel on Trump calling Milwaukee a horrible city.
You know, they're holding the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. And this morning, Trump said, Milwaukee is a horrible city, which is the good news is he might not have to go to Milwaukee. His campaign is making plans for the possibility that he might be in jail or in home confinement then. For real, RNC Chairman Michael Whatley said, synthesizing technological innovation and artistic vision, our dynamic stage design will be at the center of a historic Republican National Convention, which is a fancy way of saying we got a big TV so the president and his ankle bracelet can zoom in from the toilet at Mar-a-Lago.
It kind of puts a different sort of spin on Joe Biden in the basement. Like,
yeah.
Oh, Donald Trump on the golden toilet because he's under house arrest.
They're legit looking forward to possibly doing that. He's going to be a giant face on the screen. That's so good.
That's what you want to see more of. Just my face. Just my face.
Like really close up and gigantic.
Anyways, all of this, in my opinion, got capped off. I mean, the easiest thing to say if you're a Republican is, I have no comment. Donald Trump says some stuff, you know.
Yeah, there's
no comment. I love Milwaukee. Milwaukee's great. Summerfest is kicking off. I mean, I think Milwaukee is one of the best places to be any time of the year. But you talk about the 90 days of summer. We got you beat.
Yeah, I just had a wonderful time at Polish Fest this past weekend.
Oh! Did you wear a Polish Falcon t-shirt?
No.
Did you wear red at least?
No.
What the heck, Brian?
I'm Irish. I wore an Irish whiskey
this
shirt.
This is like on St. Patrick's Day, everyone is Irish. When you go to Polish Fest, everyone is.
Listen.
And you probably are a smidgy Polish.
No.
Have you done the 33andMe or whatever it is?
Several of my uncles and myself have married into Polish families, and so the entire family, trust me, represented Poland just fine.
They were repping Poland.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, we had a bunch of, and I love Polish culture. I love Polish food. It's fantastic. My grandma's Polish. My step grandma's Polish.
Everyone's taking genealogical notes right now, Brian.
Yeah, I know they are. Everybody's trying to figure out what I am.
Yes.
No. But anyway, my name is Brian Michael Kelly, and I thought for fun I'd wear a green shirt that said Irish whiskey on it because everybody else had
people,
a Polish thumb.
Yeah, did people give you any thumbs
not
up?
Not one person said a thing to me, and no one cared. I even put a shout out and said, hey, guys, you want to meet me at Polish Fest? No one came up and said hi. I felt lonely. They may have. Honestly, the Bloody Marys they made were...
Were they good?
Yes.
Expensive?
No.
Too many.
Strong.
Yes.
And the Tishki? Oh.
Oh. We didn't even plan that bit. My one warning to people is don't have five Bloody Marys, a couple of Polish sausages, and some potatoes, and then think you're going to polka for 30 minutes straight. It won't happen. And your calves the next day will be angry, very angry at you.
I don't.
Polka, not for the weak of heart.
Do you still dance? I mean, I don't dance. Because I could potentially knock someone out. Just my elbows being at everybody's eye level scares the crap out of me. So my entire dancing is just me keeping close and
keeping the wings in.
Trying not
tuck
to
the
hurt
wings
anyone.
In, Brian.
Like, I like dancing by myself because I can't hurt anyone around.
This has now triggered a memory. We're going to have to tangential Maggie memory here.
That's my specialty.
It is. So obviously, if you've been listening to the show for a while, I used to live in New York City. I was really fortunate. Had this kind of cool place. I lived on Central Park, which was fabulous. I didn't actually have a view. I had a view of a courtyard, not the park itself. Wasn't that fancy. But it was a nice building. Long story about how I ended up getting the hookup, because New York is all about the hookups for the good apartments, and I was very lucky to get one. And there were a lot of, I would say, like B, C, and D list celebrities that lived in the building, like a bunch of soap actors and actresses. And on occasion, and it was on Central Park South, so you'd I walked past Angelina Jolie, very cool. Adrian Grenier, I saw SJP, Sarah Jessica Parker, lots of famous people sightings. So I had run into Renee Zellweger at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Yes, that face right there. In the laundry room.
Someday it won't be so bright for her.
She's a squinter. Very nice woman. We had a little chit chat because I was doing laundry late at night too, because I had to fly somewhere in the next. Very nice person. About a week later, it is 7 o'clock in the morning. I am late. I am going to the gym to work out. So I've got, you know, my work clothes and my workout bag with all my stuff in it. And I'm late. I come barreling out of the elevator at top Maggie speed. And who is standing too close to the elevator doors and not paying attention? None other than my neighbor, Renee Zellweger. I mean, it was me plus all of this gear, work clothes, dress shoes, all of it.
The momentum is coming at you.
Oh, yes. Suffice it to say, Renee went down. Not easy, though.
Not have any choice either.
No. Boom. Oh, my goodness. I am so sorry. I might have concussed Renee Zellweger. I
congratulations.
It was a marble floor.
Good for you.
Talk about feeling as bad as you can. I was still late for my trainer, though. So I'm trying to, like, help her up, dust her off. Are you okay? Everything fine? She was very gracious about the whole thing.
Hey, listen, please be alive.
But yes.
I gotta go.
Please do not have permanent brain damage. I have to go. Nice to see you. Goodbye. It was a little bit like Brian Kelly trying to polka on a crowded dance floor. Renee, standing next to me, is tiny.
She's not a...
short little person.
Most actresses are not very large.
Miniature. Angelina Jolie, also miniature. They look tall in pictures. I assure you, they are not.
They just have gigantic heads.
Big, big heads.
Small bodies, giant heads.
Biggest head on television. Go.
Well, to be honest, the biggest head I ever saw was Patrick Swayze in person.
Oh, I can see that.
Gigantic
tiny body.
Gigantic head, chain smoker, and a dancer's body.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Bruce Willis, gigantic head.
Really?
Tiny shoulders.
Okay, so I got one for you. Giada De Laurentiis.
Okay. Yes.
So anybody, yes. This woman, she looks like a human bobblehead.
She might fall over in the,
strong wind coming in the wrong direction, upward.
She came into the restaurant when I was bouncing, and it was like windy Chicago streets, and I was seriously concerned for her.
She might blow away. Yeah, she. Observable. I've met her twice. Huge head.
Yeah.
Very attractive. Huge head. Now, I sort of have the opposite problem. Large body, little peanut head.
I have both. I have a gigantic head and a gigantic body. So, yeah, I'm just big.
Okay.
I look like Andre the Giant in sixth grade.
No, Brian, no, you do not look like Andre the Giant. No, he does not look like Andre the Giant. If you're wondering what we're all kvitzing about here, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. You can watch us do the show. Twitter. The most annoying thing about the horrible Milwaukee comment from Donald Trump was the flailing about by Wisconsin Republicans to sort of explain it away. Like, everybody knows he said it. What? Come on now. The worst of the worst was Brian Steele. First, he tweeted in response to reporting that Trump said Milwaukee is a horrible city. He tweeted, "I was in the room, President Trump did not say this. There is no better place in Wisconsin than Wisconsin in July." So it's a flat out denial. But he was not done. He then went on WISN TV and was talking with Matt Smith and said this.
Will you acknowledge that these words at least came out of his mouth? The context is different, but did he say this?
He wasn't talking about the city. He was talking about specific issues in the city. I think it was horrible that a 9-year-old boy was killed on the north side of Milwaukee yesterday. We've had challenges in the city as it relates to the public school system. The people of Milwaukee are terrific, and there's no place better to live than the state of Wisconsin. And so this is simply the media trying to not talk about the issues and the challenges that the city of Milwaukee faces.
What context?
Okay, blah, blah, blah. So he said some things were horrible. Did he say the kid getting killed was horrible? Did he say the public schools? Because that's different.
No, nobody... Brian Stile did like several times.
Yes, on that same interview, again and again and again.
Going back to, hey, he didn't say it was horrible, but let me tell you all the horrible things that I know about it.
Do we have time for the TMJ or shall we wait? We are going to wait because then he went on WTMJ and said something else entirely. It's always good to, when you have to make excuse for the former MAGA president, now presidential candidate 3.0, you had better get your story straight and then try to repeat it accurately every time the same way. Not Representative Steele. No, 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 no. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Today is a very special day for women lawyers in Wisconsin. I'll talk about that. We'll give you what Brian Steele said, version 3 on WTMJ, after these brief messages.
Instead of Milwaukee's best, it'll have to be Waukesha's. Eh.
I think God would want us to go to Milwaukee.
If I told you how much you think. What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back. I'm Maggie. That is Brian. I am 6 feet tall. What are you, 6'7"?
6'5".
6'5". Renee Zellweger, 5'4".
And I guarantee you I outweigh her by at least 3 to 4 times.
I'm not going to approximate that.
I'm not going to at all talk about that. I'm talking about me.
Yeah, but much more. I mean, I'm 8 inches without 8 inches taller than she is without shoes on. This is a lot. So Brian Stile, thank you, Brian, for... Brian Kelly, that is, for getting my style correct on Brian Steele, and it's not Steele, it's Stile. Brian Stile first said Donald Trump didn't call Milwaukee a horrible city. Then he said on WISN, well, he was calling different things about the city horrible, but of course that wasn't what any of the reporting was. And then he went on WTMJ and said this.
Did Donald Trump use the word horrible at all when referring to Milwaukee or issues in Milwaukee?
We talked about the challenges Milwaukee faces, and there's a lot of horrible things going on. I mean, a 9-year-old boy was shot and killed on the north side of Milwaukee in the early morning hours today. And so the broader conversation here is he wasn't disparaging the city. We were talking about the challenges in the city of Milwaukee, ranging from the election challenges, where the election administrator had to be removed recently, to crime. You also see it in other areas where the Milwaukee public schools can't even produce their financial reports.
Okay, Congressman, there is context to this, so that's good. I'm glad that you're providing that. But he did say Milwaukee is a horrible city. Is that what he said?
I don't think that he did. I mean, I was in the room. It was a wide-ranging conversation. My recollection is that he did not say that, that it was a conversation on specific issues. But he definitely didn't disparage the city. And that's the broader attempt that the Democrats are trying to drive forward in a media narrative. I'd actually encourage everyone to come and listen to President Trump when he comes to Racine on Tuesday and see for yourself firsthand about how he discusses not only the state of Wisconsin, but the challenges we face as a country and the policies that we need to put in place to get our country back on track.
So other members of the Wisconsin Republican delegation are not denying that he said it. Glenn Grothman is trying to say why he believes he said it, but he's not denying it was said. Tom Tiffany says he was in the room and it was said, but here's why. He said it was about election integrity. Derek Van Orden said it did happen, but he was referring to the crime rate in Milwaukee. So it's like some say it was about crime, some say it was about election integrity, but they're all saying that indeed he did say that where we're having our convention is a horrible city. My question is, should a guy who wants to be the next president of the United States in any context be referring to a major American city as a horrible city?
But again, I don't think that's the context anybody even is discussing this in. The context that this is even being discussed in is that there's key policies that are horrific. The crime in Milwaukee is horrific. Again, a 9-year-old boy was shot and killed on the north side of Milwaukee. The car thefts, the murders are still way too high. And so the fact that we should be having a conversation about the challenges we face in the largest city in the state of Wisconsin, across the largest cities across the entire country, in a broad-ranging conversation that we had about what we need to do to get this country back on track, people may have different recollections. I don't believe that he said that. But the broader context here is that no one is arguing that he disparaged the city as the media is trying to report in some outlets. The focus here is a conversation about how there are certain challenges that we truly do face in the city of Milwaukee and what policies need to be put in place to get ourselves in the right direction.
Context is always important. We have U.S. Congressman Brian Stile on the line. Congressman, this is the quote, "Milwaukee, where we have our convention, is a horrible city." Did he say that? Is that what you heard?
I was not recording. I wasn't taking notes. I don't believe he said that. But I am
okay. This is like the bouncing ball of what actually is horrible. Let's just pick one.
Three different people had three different complete different stories. Oh,
all
it was
excuses.
About the election integrity. Oh, but, it was about this.
By the way, homicides are down 21% from 2022 to 2023, which is the most recent year.
Huh.
Hmm. By the way, guess when they had way more homicides? Like in 2007. You go back to 2000. You go back to the late 90s.
Uh-huh.
We got way less violent crime now than we did then.
Huh.
Hmm. Weird. That's not to say that there aren't issues. That's not to say that a 9-year-old should not be shot, right?
I know, but if you're going to judge the entire city based on a 9-year-old being shot, maybe we should go and talk about the entirety of Manitowoc because of Stephen Avery.
Of course we should.
Should we talk about, you know, how horrible Milwaukee is because they produced and let Jeffrey Dahmer live here?
Yeah.
Are we going to judge everybody based on the one thing that you keep bringing up over and over again?
No, we shall move on. But what a dumb, I mean, how about your candidate doesn't say really stupid things every day? That would be a nice refresher. I wanted to end today because it is Wisconsin Women Lawyers Day. On this date, 150 years ago, the first woman was admitted to the state bar of Wisconsin. Her name was Lavinia Goodell. And former Chief Justice Shirley Abramson had this to say. In the 1870s, Lavinia Goodell became the first woman admitted to the Wisconsin State Bar and then fought an epic battle for the right to practice before Wisconsin Supreme Court. One century later, I was sworn in as Wisconsin's first female Supreme Court justice. Throughout my career in the law, I worked hard to open doors for others, just as Lavinia opened the doors to the courtroom where I proudly sat for more than four decades and presided as Chief Justice for more than 18 years. Lavinia resides in the pantheon of Wisconsin heroes. This was a remarkable person, and I urge everyone to learn more about Lavinia and find inspiration. Forward. The first time Lavinia tried to introduce an act that permitted her to practice and argue before the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, they rejected it. Took her a couple of times. And she was the first woman to ever argue and win a case before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I stand on her shoulders. Happy Women's Lawyer Day to all the ladies that practice law in Wisconsin and everybody in Wisconsin, because I guarantee you what, the practice of law is better in this state because women are doing it. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together. See you tomorrow. Never controlling, well traveled, well read. I'm going to make me so upset. I'm so obsessed with your energy. I'm excited that you met. I'm so obsessed with your energy. You make me so upset. I'm so obsessed with you. With you.
So, do you come to Milwaukee often?
I have no idea. I have no idea.